5 Live. The question this morning, do we need to toughen up the laws on domestic violence? Well, the government certainly think they do. The front page of the Daily Telegraph this morning, jail for the husbands who control their wives. Essentially, that story says husbands who keep wives downtrodden could face prison. Theresa May, the Home Secretary, has released proposals for a new offence of domestic abuse. Men, and I should say, or women as well, because it applies to women equally, who bully, cause psychological harm or deny money to a partner, for example, could face prosecution. The worst cases of controlling behaviour would be a jailable, would be a jailable offence. Less serious offences would receive community orders or fines. We're talking about humiliating a partner, frightening them or intimidating them. Now, there'd have to be a pattern of abuse to trigger a prosecution, and some people say this is an incursion by the state into private lives. But Theresa May says domestic abuse isn't just about violence. Within every community, there are people living in fear of those closest to them. What do you make of that? Have you suffered domestic violence? Do you think this should be an offence? 0500 909 693. That's the your call question this morning. Do we need to toughen up the laws on domestic violence? Joining us now, Eve Thomas is a former victim of domestic violence. She now advises police forces in dealing with the problem. Hello, Eve.
Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm all right. Welcome to the programme. Also with me is Rachel Horman, who's a solicitor specialising in domestic violence and forced marriage. Hello, Rachel.
Good morning.
Welcome to the programme. Eve, first of all, what happened to you?
I was a victim of domestic violence and abuse, coercive control and grooming for 21 years. Some pretty horrific stuff went on. I escaped in 2010 and have never, ever used the word escape lightly. Even to this day, and this is 4 years on, you know, I'm not a 4'10" woman that is a recluse in my bedroom anymore. I've, you know, fought hard and long to get my career back and, you know, raise my profile and done that in a bid to try and make myself safe. He still doesn't leave me alone. Only in May of this year, you know, back in court for the 8th breach of my 2nd restraining order. You know, coercive control, never ever underestimate it. Cuts, broken bones and bruises heal. You know, words scar and words instill a fear in you that, you know, it can't be described. It's petrifying.
There's an example in the newspaper this morning, and I read it out earlier, Eve, of a woman who, during the night, was woken by a drunken husband, sent to the shop for cigarettes, didn't bring a receipt back, and he made her go on her knees and beg him to forgive her. This kind of controlling behaviour, how does it affect your life? How do you live your life within these circumstances?
It breaks you. I'm going to be perfectly honest. It's absolutely life, soul, mind, heart destroying. You live for the good moments. You live for the odd smile. You know, have you made that cup of tea right? Is it the right temperature? You know, has it been tucked up to bed at the right time so that you've not woken up too early? Don't get me wrong. When you're in a relationship, I heard, you know, the phrase, a victim is at increased risk when first leaving or escaping. And I thought, how can that actually be? I can actually verify that that is 100% true, because since I escaped all that violence, I mean, I knew, you know, I could gauge his moods a little bit, even though he flipped from good to bad, you know, within seconds. And there was no real reason for him to have flipped in mood. There was no excuse. I mean, there never is any excuse for this sort of behaviour.
And when you talk there about your life, is the tea the right temperature, etc. I mean, people listening to this will say, "Well, look, I take my partner a cup of tea in the morning." Instructions like that, demands like that, were they laid down to you in your relationship, or did you just assume that role and assume some of those responsibilities, or would he directly say to you, "It needs to be this kind of temperature. It needs to come up to me at this kind of time"?
Oh, there was always, you know, some of these threats and verbal threats, you know, were always carried out while a can of petrol was being carried round. There was things like that. I mean, you know, I was set on fire. That threat of petrol, the mere smell of petrol, is traumatising. And yes, you do conform. You know, and if somebody says to you, "Don't you dare go out, I'm warning you, don't go out," when you felt, you know, a fist in your face or, you know, a foot connect with the bottom of your spine, trust me, you do as you're told, you conform. And it's manipulation, and it's grooming, and it's coercive control. And I really cannot convey enough how destroying that is. And it takes years and years and years. I mean, you know, I was a very strong, very vocal young woman when I met my ex-husband. Within months, that disappeared. And I fought really, really hard to get that back. And like I say, I mean, I fight every single day to be safe. I've just recently moved from the house that I was abused in. At the time, I felt that I was safer there when once I'd escaped because, you know, I had the police station, the response unit on my doorstep. My new neighbours knew what he looked like. I felt safer in that house. It then became that way that I wasn't safe. I wasn't getting any peace. I had no quality of life. It was dreadful. So I've now moved to a new address, which is a safe address, trying to protect that in order for him not to be able to access that information. Is, you know, it's so, so hard. And victims are fleeing domestic violence. They're going into refuges or, they're setting up homes somewhere else. But there's no means of protecting that address from abusers. So, and, you know, they're being disclosed all over the UK.
So this issue, Eve, then, do you feel this new law, potential new law of domestic abuse, would have protected you?
No, it wouldn't. It would have helped. And I think it's, again, another tool that's there. But what needs to happen here is, you know, everybody points the finger at the police. If the police have not got the tools, if they've not got the resources and they've not got the education, how on earth can the police protect us if the legislation isn't there? And this is why, for almost 12 months now, you know, we submitted a brief, we served a brief on the Ministry of Justice on the 12th of December last year. And the Home Office accepted, you know, the evidence that we had submitted from across the country. I mean, I have been absolutely inundated with victims coming forward at their, you know, their secret addresses that the abusers do not know, their safe addresses disclosed by various different sources, be it DWP, be it Companies House, be it solicitors. It's a problem, so we need to legislate. We need to get this. Okay. We need to do it right.
Eve, do stay with us. If anything Eve said resonates with you, do give us a call, please, 0500 909 693. Perhaps you're in a relationship and you can recognise many of the things that Eve was saying, or perhaps you've managed to escape from such a relationship. Perhaps you work with social services and you deal with people with these problems. Do let us know, 0500 909 693. Now, I mentioned that Rachel Horman's with me, a solicitor who specialises in domestic violence and forced marriage. Rachel, we'll point out that there were 103,500 domestic abuse cases referred for prosecution by the police last year, which was a record high.
Yeah.
But there will be people listening to this who say, well, hang on a minute, we've got a stalking law and harassment law, laws on assault. We're already covered in this area. Why the need for an offence of domestic abuse?
Well, we do need to see a change in the law because there's a lot of unacceptable behaviour that goes on before it turns violence. And the idea about this is to enable victims to be assisted by the police and the courts before it gets to violence. We don't want to see two women a week being murdered by the partners. And in the vast majority of cases, there will have been a lot of coercive control and psychological abuse leading up to that. And that's exactly why, when it does turn violent, women are already broken down and don't have the confidence to leave.
One of the reasons for discussing this offence, say the government, is that it'd be less ambiguous than the other laws. But you talk about coercive control.
Yeah.
That's, by its very nature, is going to be difficult to prove, isn't it?
Not necessarily, no. You know, lots of offences have difficulty to some extent in proving them, things like child abuse.
I'll bring you back in. Let's take Eve's example of having to take a cup of tea at the right temperature to her partner.
Yeah.
How on earth in a court of law would you prove that?
Well, it would never just be that one offence. The idea behind this is a pattern.
But it may be a pattern of similar offences.
Yeah, that might be one of them.
Of that level, there may not be a bruise to show.
That was a bad example.
I don't mean to trivialise this, but I'm just trying to establish it. As you said, it's not a bruise or blood or a broken bone. It's a string of things like that. And in a way, it's a subjective issue, isn't it? How do you prove that?
Well, you would have to show that the reasonable person would recognise that that type of behaviour was abusive. And the suggestion by Paladin and Women's Aid and Sarah Charlton, the charities that have been campaigning for this, is that it isn't just a one-off that's prosecuted. It would be a pattern of events, a bit like the stalking legislation. And there is now lots of ways to gather evidence. I have clients who are being tracked. Their whereabouts is tracked constantly by their phones. Trackers being placed on their cars on a regular basis. That sounds like something in the movies, and it really isn't. All of that would provide evidence for the courts. Things like abusive messages on Facebook. If somebody's taking all somebody's money, that can be shown by a bank statement. Somebody's money goes in, it instantly goes out to their partner's account. So there are lots and lots of ways to gather this evidence and mean that prosecutions can take place. And we have lots of offences already where quite often it is just one word against the other, and we still get convictions for those.
Eve, you didn't sound surprised at all there at the thought of trackers being placed on cars and on phones.
No, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, you know, markers actually put on the seats in my car. And if I dared to move the seat, I was in trouble. If that marker had been disturbed when I went to work, because I have to go to work in the car and come home in the car, you know, everything is tracked, everything is monitored. This is about control, and I admit, hold my hands up, I used a very, very bad example there as a cup of tea. Let's use the can of petrol. You know, the actual fear that was instilled with the word, accompanied with that, that is coercive control.
We've had a text here from Stephen Swindon. It says, I hope you're going to give male victims of domestic abuse equal coverage for a change, or are we going to have the same feminist and equal airtime? But this law would apply to women equally as well, who were controlling their husbands. We'll talk more in just a second. Rachel and Eve, stay with us. Do give us a call this morning, 0500 909 693. Do we need this new offence of domestic abuse? It will talk about people who humiliate, frighten or intimidate their partners, keep them away from friends and family, maybe restrict access to money. Women's Aid have a story in the papers this morning about a woman who suffered years of psychological abuse from her husband. The husband would put her down, hide her possessions, scream at her. At one point, he would spend £200 a week going to strip clubs and not give her any money to spend. I'm talking to Rachel Horman, a solicitor this morning, who's with us, and Eve Thomas as well, who suffered domestic violence. Eve, it's, I mentioned earlier on, a record high last year of 103,500 people who had domestic abuse cases referred for prosecution. And you said, did you say 21 years you were in your relationship, Eve?
Yes, 21 years.
I just wonder, because again, we're getting texts in as well for people say, well, look, why do people get into these relationships in the first place? Do they not know? Tricia in Cambridge says, I can never understand how people get into abusive relationships. It seems they don't know their partners long before moving in together. What would you say, Eve, because there will be men and women listening to this who are in an abusive relationship and can't get out. You escaped after 2 decades. What would you say to them?
Well, first of all, I think it's very, very important that today, especially because of this story in the media, and obviously, you know, social media is going absolutely bananas over this, that we get the domestic violence 24-hour helpline number out there as much as possible. The media, the police forces, everybody can help with this. You know, you've got a vast amount of followers. So get that number, 0808-2000-247. They will signpost men, so men and women can phone up. You know, you're not alone, reach out, but you've got to make sure that you're safe. And, you know, I'm hoping that I can use this opportunity now, Tony, to, you know, say to Theresa May, say to the Home Office, say to David Cameron, come on, you know, it's common sense with knobs on, as Lord Sumption said, and as David Malone, you know, has wrote about. We need to do this. We need to stop putting sticking plasters. We need to rip all these sticking plasters off. I know it's going to hurt a little bit, but let's do this properly. Let's really legislate and let's ensure victims are safe. Because, again, you know, we're going to have... If this if this is legislated, we are going to have, you know, more victims coming forward. That is going to put added pressure on the already stretched police force and other services out there.
Yeah.
We're not making sure at this moment in time that a victim is safe and victims are fleeing. And, you know, I say it again, they're setting up new homes. Those new homes are safe addresses, any address an abuser doesn't know. That needs protecting.
It is a very difficult subject to talk about. And naturally, there are people texting us who say they don't want to talk to us on the phone, but they're happy to text us. One lady here, Sue, says everything that lady says is true. That's you, Eve. I escaped after 7 years with my daughter. Now every day is a bonus. That's from Sue in Southampton. She says, thank you for broadcasting this, but I can't ring, as after 20 years, it is still too painful. Rachel, you deal with victims of domestic abuse.
Yes.
Theresa May, again, in proposing this offence, says domestic abuse needs to be brought out into the open. It's wrong to put your partner in fear. Just put some context on this for us. Give us some examples of the kind of things you've seen, the kind of coercive behaviour that people have used to their partners.
Well, this is not about the physical. I think everybody would accept that a black eye is wrong. But what we're looking at is the behaviour before that. And most, actually, of the domestic violence murders, when they're examined, do contain a lot of coercive control. So it can get very serious. So some examples of that might be somebody who is timed when they go to the shops. You mentioned the woman who was woken up in the middle of the night and made to go to the shops. That was one of my clients. Their whole life is basically monitored. I've had clients that have been arrested for stealing sanitary products because they haven't had any money whatsoever to even buy sanitary products. And I think that just shows the desperation. It might be preventing somebody from sleeping on a constant basis. And you can that's kind of something that would be used as torture. And what we are talking about is basically people being terrorised. Another example of it might be what's referred to in the media as revenge porn. I've had clients quite regularly that have been photographed while they've been asleep and naked without their consent. And then that's then used to bribe them into doing all sorts of things. I'll put it on the internet. I'll send it to your family. It's very difficult to prosecute any of those things that I've mentioned at the moment. And that's exactly why we need this offence.
This offence of domestic abuse. Yeah, let's speak to Al in Leeds. Hello, Al.
Good morning.
Al, what do you want to say?
Yeah, it's quite interesting listening to your show this morning. It's hit a nerve, really. I've got a friend, won't go into too much detail. She's in a very violent relationship. Recently, away on holiday, and I get a phone call to basically say, fallen out, not going anywhere, he's been aggressive again. And you could hear, it was like a horror film, you could hear the, please, no, go away, and then the next thing, the phone goes dead, and it was actually like a horror film. Anyway, it transpires that the next day she comes down to see us with a black eye, bruised jaw, wouldn't let us call the police. That's it, it's over, she said, no more of this, I can't take it anymore. And then time passed, about 2 weeks, and she came round and said, listen, I'm going to give him another go, but this isn't an isolated case. This is probably the seventh, eighth time this has happened. When they first got together, very passionate. It was all about making love all the time and things like that. And you could see there was passion there, but it's gone from passion now into pure aggression. And she just gets beaten, probably, I'd say, once every 3 or 4 weeks. And it's weird. It seems like it's an addiction to go back to him. I thought my mother's friend was in the same situation many years ago, and for years she was in this relationship, and it's almost until it hits a chord, something hits a chord in the head, and it makes them wake up and think, I need out of this.
That's why Eve talks about escaping. Al, listen, thank you for that. Let's just hear Anna's story as well. Hello, Anna.
Hello.
Hi, Anna. Hi.
Hi.
What happened to you, Anna?
I met my second husband, very much on the rebound from my first. He lied to me about who he was. He lied to me about his qualifications. He told me he had a very good job, a very good income, and it all happened very, very quickly. I found myself in a relationship that I wasn't 100% sure about, but I now know that I was manipulated into getting into this relationship. We moved in together. We married. We had children between us. and we had our children from our previous relationships as well, so it was a large family. And he took all, we were on benefits at the time, he took all the money. He had a whole lot paid into his account. I had very little. I had to ask him for money if I needed it for myself or the children. He made all the decisions about spending it. He didn't let me go out. He gradually drew me away from my family and friends that I had known before the relationship. But in a very, very subtle way, I didn't realise it was happening until probably about 5 or 6 years into the relationship, when I realised I just had lost contact with just about everybody. My own family didn't want to know me because they could see what was happening. I realised all the lies he told, even though he denied them initially. I managed to find out various things about him until he couldn't deny it anymore. When I did find out things about him, he was verbally abusive and turned it all back on me and said he had lied because of me. I'd made him lie. I just suddenly realised that I was completely under his thumb. But it was people telling me that I was being abused that actually made me think. I hadn't even thought of that word. But people who knew me and could see what was happening to me actually said, this is abuse. Mm. And I tried going out one evening for the first time for years, and I came back. It wasn't late. It wasn't a particularly, it wasn't a long evening out. And I came back, and because I wasn't back when he thought I would be back, I told him I didn't know what time I'd be back, but because I wasn't back at the right time, I got an hour's worth of verbal abuse, being told I was all sorts of things. And I was very upset. I didn't understand what was going on. I just couldn't understand it. But I didn't give in. I decided that I was going to go out more. I was going to see friends. I was going to make more friends because my daughter had just started school. So I was getting contact with more people. And he didn't like it at all. And it was a complete nightmare.
Yeah.
I had to... I'd go out, I'd see my friends, and sometimes I'd take the children for play dates or whatever. Other times it would be in an evening, I'd go out for a couple of hours.
So, Anna, it's this kind of incremental behaviour, I think, that this law is designed to try and halt, isn't it? The people are in relationships and they don't quite realise, but over a period of time, they're being controlled. Do you think if this law had been in place, you may have used it? If domestic abuse had been an offence, would you have turned, do you think, to the authorities?
I may well have done, and I think I may have been persuaded to by people who were helping me, people who were supporting me, because they could see what was happening, and they would have been witnesses for me. They would have been able to say, look, this woman is being abused. It wouldn't have just been my words, because there are enough people who could see what was happening.
Okay.
So, yes, I think I may have done. It may have been useful.
But just to confirm, Anna, briefly, you're out of the relationship now, and are you happy now?
Much happier now, yes. Okay. I'm me now. I can be myself.
Right, well, I appreciate you ringing us this morning, Anna. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, does anything Anna said strike a chord with you? Are you in that kind of relationship? Have you been in that kind of relationship and managed to escape? Give us a call, 0500 909 693. Text us on 85058. Lots more to come in the next half hour. It's 9:32. Troll their wives could face jail under a new offence of domestic abuse being proposed by Theresa May. People who bully, cause psychological harm or deny money to their partner, for example, could be prosecuted. Is this law needed? Would it apply to you? 0500 909 693. Some really interesting texts coming in this morning. One here says, I'm a man who was physically, verbally and mentally attacked by my ex-wife. She would drink and then threaten me and emotionally blackmail me. She would want to see all the money I spent and was always ringing me to see where I was, including calling my work. I do want to remain anonymous, though, and not talk on the phone. And just another one here from Margaret says, I've got a close male friend who's being abused badly by his wife, who's a drinker. She demands to be driven everywhere and gets up in the middle of the night to scream abuse at him. Then next day acts like it never happened. Shopping is time monitored if he's out alone. He won't leave, though. They are 75 years of age, which shows it applies to a lot of people. Let's speak to Laura. Hello, Laura.
Hi there.
Hi. Now, Laura, you're chief executive, should I say, of Paladin, the National Stalking Advocacy Service. What do you make of this proposed new offence of domestic abuse?
Well, we've been campaigning for
the pattern of abuse and coercive controlling and psychologically abusive behaviour to be criminalised, and feel it's very important that we close that gap for the non-physical behaviours, because a lot of victims say when we surveyed them that actually the broken bones and bruises, they heal and fade, but ultimately the psychological scars remain forever. So we feel it's very important that we criminalise the very essence of domestic violence, which is all about power and control.
Do you say one automatically follows the other, that it begins at low level coercion, for example, and then builds incrementally up to physical abuse? Does it always follow?
Yes, well, we see that in a lot of cases, that the physical and sexual abuse happens to maintain the control, but lots of times it starts off, you know, it can be with name calling or mind games or, you know, doing things that sort of start to make victims question themselves. And very, over a period of time, effectively, sort of the self-esteem and the confidence of a victim can be worn down. And we do see physical and sexual coming in at a later stage. So, of course, once it's physical and sexual, it's already escalated. And once you've got a physical assault, there is legislation to deal with that. So it's a common assault, it's an ABH or a GBH. But we want to get into the early identification intervention piece.
One of the issues here is, though, the willingness to prosecute. We've had a text here saying a new law's not going to help. Perpetrators are not prosecuted for assault as it is. I'm a social worker and see daily perpetrators cautioned for strangling their partners. Theresa May should be putting her efforts into existing services, in particular addressing perpetrator behaviour, so that long-term changes can be made. I wonder whether that might be, some people may consider that more useful, actually educating people how to have a normal relationship rather than threatening to lock people up.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I actually think you have to do it all. I think you have to do the early education piece and healthy relationships for younger people, because there's a lot of them that are in abusive relationships that don't know and don't realise that. And I think you also need to ensure that the legislation, you know, and perpetrators are being put before the courts for physical things, you know, and absolutely I agree with what the social worker is saying. And you have to deal with the high-risk end of business. So we have multi-agency risk assessment conferences to when we know a case is high risk. But the piece that we miss is a lot of victims don't come forward to the police because they say it's not a criminal offence and they know the police can't do anything. So for us, you have to do it all. And we are campaigning for, you know, services not to be cut, as well as the fact that we want to see the criminalisation gap closed and the laws modernised to reflect the very essence of domestic violence. We've done it with stalking, we've done it with forced marriage, and the elephant in the room is domestic violence.
OK, Laura, thank you very much indeed. I guess one of the other issues, and I'll discuss this with Solicitor Rachel Horman in just a second, is actually encouraging women to come forward. It's one thing to put something into law, isn't it? But another one trying to encourage people to make that complaint. Right, in a moment, we'll be speaking to Anna Lark, who's the former girlfriend of Justin Lee Collins, the comedian who was convicted of harassment causing fear of violence back in October 2012. We'll speak to Anna in just a second. We'll get the latest travel news first of all, though it's 9:45. Offence of domestic abuse. People who bully, cause psychological harm or deny money to their partner, for example, could face jail if they humiliate, frighten or intimidate their partner. It applies equally to men and women. With me in the studio is Rachel Horman, a solicitor specialising in domestic violence. And talking to us now, joining the programme, is Anna Lark. Hello, Anna.
Hello.
Anna, I'll just explain to people, you're the former girlfriend of Justin Lee Collins, the comedian and entertainer. He was convicted of harassment causing fear of violence in October 2012.
That's right.
Yeah. Anna, I'll get your reaction in a moment to this proposed offence. But first of all, just tell us, what was life like with Justin Lee Collins? What happened?
At first, it was great. He was wonderful. He was charming, sweet, lovely, kind. He used to shower me with gifts, tell me I was the best thing in the world. And then because he used to buy me gifts, he bought me a mobile phone and he said, here's the mobile phone. And I thought, that's a nice phone, thanks ever so much. And he said, and here's a new number on it as well. So you now you're not allowed to talk to anyone from your past. Here's your new number. This is our new start together. We're going ahead together. You know, everyone that you've ever known in the past, you're not going to speak to them anymore. And I just thought, oh my God, okay. So from then onwards, it basically, after the phone, he said to me, he hates things like Facebook and Twitter and things like that. And he said to me, no Facebook, no Twitter, any like social networks, like there was LinkedIn as well, and even my Xbox Live, and because I design video games and do PR video games, so you know, even that wasn't allowed. So he started to isolate me. He would tell me what to wear. He told me that I wasn't allowed to wear flat shoes. He told me how to speak. Every single aspect of me he wanted to change. And he said that our relationship would be so much better if I changed. And then it was verbal abuse, which obviously I can't say some of the things he used to call me. But he's like, about my appearance, you're fat, you're ugly, you're disgusting, no one's going to want you. Yeah, just controlling. He controlled me 24/7. He sleep deprived me as well. He used to say to me, you have to stay up the same time as me. And he's quite a night owl. Whereas, you know, I suffer dreadful insomnia. So I would be very tired about 11 o'clock, but not be allowed to sleep. He said to me that if I didn't like stay up with him till four or whatever, that would encourage him to text other women. So and, you know, he had a ritual where I had to put the breakfast out in a certain way. Then, like, we would go into Richmond and he would go to the coffee shop at the end of the road. And he said, I'm going to, you know, I'm going down there, you know, meet me in 10 minutes. So he would spend about half an hour in the bathroom, you know, tarting himself up and like give me about 10 minutes to get ready. So obviously I'm not going to look brilliant. And I used to walk down the road to meet him and he used to have his hands folded looking at me saying, he just used to shake his head and say, you look awful, turn around, go back, get changed. And it was just things like that, just all the time, threatening. That was like horrendous. He used to threaten that he was going to kill me. He used to threaten that he was going to put me in intensive care. He used to threaten that he was going to kill the cat. I mean, the cat was so petrified of him. The cat used to soil itself. I'm not joking, poo and pee itself on the spot the minute he saw Justin. So it was just, it was absolutely horrendous. My life was not my own. He basically reprogrammed me to make me think that I was just worthless and absolutely nothing and that I could not live without him.
Rachel's with me, a solicitor who specialises in domestic violence. Anna, you've got a question, Rachel.
Yes, and hi, Anna. We met earlier.
Hi. Yes, we did, yeah.
Could I just ask, would you say that the abuse got worse over time and more serious? Would you say that that's how it was in your relationship?
That's exactly how it was. At first, it was, you know, the mobile phone, and it was ever so slow. It was almost drip-fed. And then it just got worse and worse and worse. And there was physical. There's things I can't talk about for legal reasons, but there were some horrendous, horrendous things happening. And
We're going to lose you in a minute, so I just want to point out that, that Justin was given 140 hours community service.
Oh, my goodness me. Unbelievable.
Found guilty of harassment and causing fear of violence. Yeah. If this offence of domestic abuse had been in place, would you have gone for help earlier, do you think?
Yes, I would have. I would have. And I think the whole process would have been a lot quicker as well. A lot quicker. We sort of went through the mill trying to get all sorts of like evidence and things, because it's quite hard to like categorise what, you know, emotional abuses, coercive control, verbal, you know, it's this, there's so much to it and it's so damaging. I can't even begin to describe how damaging it is. I mean, I have post-traumatic stress disorder where I get flashbacks and nightmares and everything's getting better day by day. It destroys you. When I left him, I ran away from him and I went back to my parents. I didn't even know what to do with myself. I was just like, I don't even know me anymore. It was just, it was horrendous.
Anna, listen, we have to lose you now, but thank you very much indeed for sharing your story with us.
That's my pleasure.
Thanks. That's Anna Locke, the former girlfriend of Justin Lee Collins, but a person in her own right, of course, not to label her just as Justin's former girlfriend. Rachel, listening to that, she said that this new offence of domestic abuse would have been useful in the early days.
Yeah.
But how difficult is it I don't want to make this a men-women thing, because I say it applies equally to both, but we'll say women in this instance. How difficult is it for women to just remove themselves from the relationship without actually having to resort to the law?
It can be very difficult. And if it was purely physical, it would be much easier, because I think, like everybody has said, the bruises heal. But when it is psychological, then that can affect you for years and years. It erodes your confidence, and then it makes it less likely that you will have the confidence to leave. The other thing that you mentioned when you were speaking to Laura, who has been instrumental in campaigning to change this law, is how do we encourage people to come forward? And the fact is that I see clients on a daily basis who are going to the police and reporting psychological abuse and being turned away and told, come back when he hits you. So it's not surprising that they don't go and report a second time. So we need the police to take action. And at the moment, their hands are tied because we haven't got the legislation.
As you can imagine, Rachel, this morning, a lot of people preferring to talk to us on the text because just of the sensitivity of this subject. Ali Norfolk says, I've recently escaped an abusive relationship after nearly 6 years. I had no idea it was abusive until I started going to counselling for something unrelated, and she made me realise his behaviour was abusive. When you love somebody, you can't see the signs. You make excuses, and abusers are very good at making you feel it's all your fault. Your self-esteem and confidence diminishes. And so the longer it goes on, the harder it is to leave. I ended up calling Refuge Helpline, who put me in touch with a local domestic abuse charity, and just knowing you have their support makes such a difference. But I can totally understand how victims become too scared to leave. The other thing I experienced was my partner being very unpredictable, abusive, stroke, passive, aggressive, manipulative 1 minute, and then charming and saying he loves me and didn't mean it the next. And you always want to believe they can change. I believe me and my son could have been stuck in this relationship for many years had I not got out now. Let's speak to Joanna Nicholas, who's an independent social worker. Hello, Joanna.
Hello there.
Theresa May, in proposing this offence, says there'll need to be a pattern of abuse to trigger a prosecution. So we were talking earlier about the difficulty, perhaps, of prosecuting someone for this kind of behaviour. When she says a pattern of abuse, what would you be looking for from a social worker's perspective?
Well, what we see in social work and in child protection is a very, very strong link between domestic abuse and child abuse. And so we are often seeing patterns of behaviour with the parents that we're working with. And it tends to be, you know, I know you will have covered this already, but it tends to be the woman who is the primary carer of children and very often the victim of domestic abuse. And we are often seeing patterns, and we can work very closely with the police to help build up a picture of what's going on within the family. I think what people often forget about is the impact on children. And there is a devastating impact on children of witnessing or hearing domestic abuse. And it's something that we are getting better at understanding, but I think the general public aren't there yet in terms of understanding what it does to a child too.
What this new offence, what's it designed to do? Is it simply to punish people in a relationship? It doesn't go anywhere to either to trying to keep that, to improve that relationship, does it? Or I wonder if it's just a method of extricating a person from an abusive relationship as well.
Well, I mean, I would say, and my field is definitely the child protection aspect of this, and what I would say, Tony, is that anything that we can do that helps recognise and understand the impact of domestic abuse, not only on the victim but also on the child, has to be a good thing. And every step that we can take to try and eradicate this offence has to be a good one. And as Rachel says, it is something that is very difficult, and very often we're saying to the mother, you need to be leaving this relationship. But if she is a victim of domestic abuse and is being controlled by her partner, that can often be something that is just not possible to do, and our expectations can be very unrealistic.
Okay.
So the more help and support she has from the police, from the law, the better.
Joanna, thank you very much indeed. We talked earlier, didn't we, about the willingness of the authorities to prosecute under this new offence. We had a social worker text us to say she or he wasn't sure that they would. Jane is on the line now. Hello, Jane.
Hello, how are you this morning?
I'm all right, Jane. What's your situation?
My situation is I was in a violent situation, started with coercive control from my ex-partner for 15 years. I escaped, moved twice to get away from him. I am currently living in a tent with my 15-year-old son and our dogs because no one will take us because I have a 15-year-old son. I've had to literally travel around the country. No finances, no nothing. When I was pregnant with my son, I even went to the hospital with a very bad bruise to my stomach, foot mark, and nobody asked any questions at all. He's currently on bail for a very vicious attack on me before I left.
Let me get this straight. You're living in a tent with your child?
With my child. And have been doing so since about mid-July. And before that, was living in a B&B but couldn't stay there because I couldn't afford to. So we are living in a tent at the moment. and I'm trying to get work anywhere I can. I have no benefits. I have nothing. All I have is my child, my car, and my dogs, and that is all we have. I have no support whatsoever. I have begged for support. I have gone to councils. I have done everything, and everybody turns me away.
It's almost an impossible situation, Jane. And sadly, we've only got a minute left. And there's lots I'd like to talk to you about. But just explain perhaps how you managed to get out of the relationship.
I have two children, and I literally got in the car and left. And that was the only thing I could do. And that's what I did originally. And I moved, and I've moved again. And I have to just keep moving. He just will not stop. And that's what people do not understand. They will not stop. They are not scared of the law. They just will not stop.
I guess while you're in that tent and while you're on the move, the one thing to say is you at least feel safe for the time being.
No, because he is looking for me. He has the money to look for me, and he will always look for me. It's not about love. It's completely about control and everything else.
Jane, an astonishing and rather shocking way to end the programme. Thank you very much for telling us your story. I guess Jane is one of those people Theresa May wants to help with this new offence of domestic abuse. Thanks for listening. Thanks for taking part. Rachel, thanks to you as well. Victoria's up next. I'll see you tomorrow.